Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
This is really neat. I'm standing up here, and we had rock and roll, and now it's kind of mellow music back here. I think this is just really neat. I found out there's a wedding, I think, that's going on. It's a pleasure for me to be here, and I want to thank Cindy and Ron for inviting me to come. I've never been to St. Louis, so this is real special, and I love the enthusiasm. This is just absolutely dynamite. And thanks a lot. I love it. That's what we're all here for. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we absolutely insist on being happy. And I think that's dynamite. It's wonderful. I'd like to start off by talking a little bit about my higher power. I truly believe that I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that there just are no negatives in God's world. And I'd like to use a few examples of that, because one of the things, it's maybe a little bit funny, but also it helps the butterflies to land a little bit and me kind of get unnervous as I, you know, where I can start, because I don't know y'all and I feel like, you know, I'm coming from California, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do and all that kind of stuff, so it kind of helps me not to be so nervous. One of the things that that God has taught me is about my name. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula. It's Polly. And I had alcoholic feelings way back there when I was a little bitty kid, and I couldn't stand to be teased. I absolutely hated it. And with a name like Polly, I always got, you know, Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I just hated it. I couldn't stand to be teased. I couldn't stand for people to laugh at me. And when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out the name Polly was a gift, because there's not very many Pollys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when somebody said Polly, I was pretty sure they were talking to me. When I found out I had the disease of alcoholism, I thought it was absolutely the worst thing that could happen to anybody. I thought it was the worst thing that could happen. I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and just pray to God to have heart disease or cancer so I could die of something respectable, because I knew I was dying. And now I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if it were not for the disease of alcoholism, I would not qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to this program. 6.5 years ago, now God's really getting a sense of humor now. 6.5 years ago, I married my husband, Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. You know, I sound like a hooker that's got tacos and guns, you know, with a name like that. But what's really neat about it is that I don't mind being laughed at anymore. And that's really neat. You know, I can call up Sears or Penny's or somebody, and I'll say, this is Polly Pistol, and you should hear the person on the other end as they're going, you know, they can't get it together and to try to talk to me. And one more time, it's my greatest gift, because with a name like that, I've learned to be laughed at. And that's kind of the way God works in my life, because just when I think it's the absolutely worst thing that could happen to me, it turns out to be my greatest asset. And that's some of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that I should tell in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today, and I will do that. I'm an only child of Southern Baptist faith, and that's probably enough to screw anybody up. I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of old ideas. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we must get rid of all our old ideas, or the results are nil. And I had a whole boatload full of them, I'll tell you. I'd like to talk a little bit about what it was like. I do not come from an alcoholic home, but I still stand behind this podium like many people who come from alcoholic homes and say, I never wanted to be like my dad, and I never wanted to be like my mom. But needless to say, I was like both of them. And I hear a lot of people talk about talk about that behind podiums. You know, they didn't want to be like their drunk dad or their drunk mom. Well, I felt the same way, even though I did not come from a home where alcoholism was there. But I came from a home of a lot of craziness. And a lot of that craziness today, I'm finding out I'm still carrying a lot of those old ideas. And there's a lot of things I'm beginning to see that I have to change today that is a result of all those old ideas. I had a very angry father. The only difference between my dad and me is he just forgot to take a drink, because what was with him is he was enraged. And my mother used to say, now let's just be real quiet so Daddy doesn't have one of his fits. Because we didn't ever want to set Daddy off, because when Daddy got mad, a lot of things happened. People got hit, furniture flew. I have seen my dad take a door and rip it right out of the door facing, and in a rage of anger. And then I had this mom who sat over here, and she just didn't do anything. She just sat there. And when he would beat up on her, I would take care of her, and I would comfort her. And I would go off to school like other little girls, but instead of going and doing things after school and wanting to be a part of, I needed to get home because I needed to take care of what was going on at my house, so I thought, that it was my responsibility to keep peace in this family and to take care of my mom and to see to it that my dad would stay calm. Now, what has happened is I brought a lot of that craziness with me, and thinking that I could manage and control the world, I managed and controlled this family. Well, what I would look at this angry dad, and I would think, I never want to be like him. I never want to be angry like him. And what happened was, I was just like him. And I would look at my mom, and she would sit there, and I would say, what a wimp. I'm so ashamed of you. I just don't want to be anything like you. And what I found out is I was just like her. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I discovered I was an angry wimp. I was the worst of both. And what happened was, is I would take this anger out on my two sons. Nobody else would ever see this rage but these two children. And the rest of the world would see me, and I was just so nice. And I would just allow people to just walk all over me. And I am beginning, I'm saying these days, I just turned 10 on April the 11th. And thanks. And I was running around California going, double-digit sobriety, you know, and I was just so excited. And one of the things that I'm finding out at age 10 is I am beginning to get a glimmer of just how sick I really am. And all of a sudden, you know, I think, God, am I going backwards in Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm not. It's just that I am becoming aware of just how insidious and cunning and baffling the disease of alcoholism really is. What I am learning today, and the reason I talk about this family and some of the craziness, is I'm learning a lot about that craziness today. One of the things that I did in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is I did a lot of what the Big Book talks about, and it talks about manipulation through kindness. And I did a lot of that in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about rigorous honesty. And I'm not sure I knew a lot about rigorous honesty. I knew a lot about manipulation, and I knew how to get you to do what I wanted you to do, and I found out what worked best, and that was to be real nice. And I carried this into sponsorship and into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what I was doing in the program. And one day I just took a look at that, and it was confronted to me by people who love me a lot, and I began to see how when we talk about, you know, there's a higher power and I'm not it, that how I was just really playing a lot of God-like things and setting myself up to just know so much and to manipulate you and to try to get you to do what I wanted you to do. And these are some of the character defects that are coming to surface at 10 years of sobriety. Because it's real difficult to swallow that kind of pride when you think all this time you've just been so noble and so wonderful. And I found out that I hadn't been that at all, manipulating and dishonest. So with those little pieces of truth by many people who love me, I'm growing. And I'm trying to learn to be honest. And what I like to do in my AA talks is always like to kind of start off with, if I get going off on my story, I may forget that. And, you know, you all need to know that. You know, that all the drinking and all that kind of stuff, I mean, we all know how to do that. I just want to give you a message of hope in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that this is a growing deal. You know, it's you just got to grow or go. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about rigorous honesty. And, you know, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just knew I was honest because I didn't steal. I'm cash register honest. And I thought that's what you were talking about. I didn't take stuff from you. But, boy, I would lie my head off to get you to like me. It was real important that you liked me a lot. And I'm so grateful today to really be able to see what the big book is talking about, rigorous honesty, and that it's okay for you to see me just the way I am, warts and all. And that's really neat, because there's definitely a higher power if you can love me, the good and the bad. And for that, I'm really grateful, because I think that's what this program is all about. It's us accepting each other and loving each other just the way we are. And I think that's what's so beautiful about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My first encounter with a drug was not alcohol. My first encounter was with Demerol. And I don't know if there's any Demerol addicts in the audience, but I'm here to tell you that one shot of Demerol and I thought I had died and gone to heaven. At the age of 13... I had migraine headaches as a kid, which ought to have indicated that I had some real problems at age 13 having migraine headaches. And my mom was a nurse, and back in the olden days when I was 13 years old, they prescribed Demerol for migraine headaches. And I ended up taking Demerol on the average of 3 to 4 times a week from the age of 13 to 17. And I could have the best headaches you guys ever saw. I mean, there's not an actress in Hollywood that could have topped those headaches. And at 18, I found alcohol. And it just really wasn't necessary to have headaches anymore. And at the age of 18, I married an Air Force officer, and I knew that he was just going to carry me off into happy destiny, and I was going to live happily ever after, and life was going to be wonderful, and this crazy family that I came from, everything was going to be okay. And, you know, life was just wonderful, and this is the kind of dreamland that I lived in. I just thought that my life was going to be like, you know, some fairy tale that I had read. And then reality hit. I married a SAC pilot in the Air Force, and come to find out, he was going to be gone a lot. And so being a real alcoholic, and my problem is people, places, and things, then I began to have a lot of problems with the U.S. Air Force. They were my problem. They were really out to get me. They were going to take my husband away from me, so there was nobody there to take care of me. And what I found out when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is here when I was a kid, I took all the responsibility of this family. But the reality was, is I never wanted the responsibility of anything, least of all myself. I did not want responsibility for me. And if there was anything wrong with me, it was your fault, or it was its fault, or it was them, and we all know who them are. You know, it was just something other than me. It was just people, places, and things made me the way I was. And if it wasn't for all this stuff, then I would have been fine. I'm not going to tell you a long drunkalogue tonight. And the reason that I'm not going to tell you a drunkalogue is not because I don't believe in it. And I've met several people that are just very newly sober. And I know that the newly sober people, and it's not that I don't believe in that. But the reason you're not going to hear much of a drunkalogue is because I slept through it. I am a couch potato alcoholic. I was not out there having a good time. And when I tell you what I used, you'll understand. I drank a lot of booze, and I was real nervous. You know, remember those migraine headaches? I'm real nervous. So I ended up going to Air Force doctors, and, you know, they never want to upset the jock. So they will give you things like Valium and Librium and Nimutol and Seconal and alcohol. And when you take all those things, you're not conscious. So I just sort of stayed out most of all that. So if we talk about my drunkalog, we're all going to fall asleep because that's what I did. I lost my train of thought. That's just, you get up here behind the podium and then you think, oh my God. Then what am I going to say next? Anyway. But one of the things that I often did when I went to parties is I didn't drink. Now, in case you missed the accent, I'm Southern. And Southern barn girls just don't act, we're always act like ladies in public. And I was married to an Air Force officer, and as soon as I got married to him, we were told how to behave. So, of course, I was always a lady in public. So when I came home, that's when I did my drinking. And I just would drink, take pills, and lay on my sofa and watch soap operas and listen to Joan Baez sing the blues. And that's where I did it. There are a few things I'd like to tell you about that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, there's a little story that I'd like to tell you about that happened with my ex, who is now my ex-husband. But after we had been in the service for 16 years, he was stricken with congestive heart failure. The thing that I truly believe is that the person that I used to be will always drink and use. The person that I used to be will always drink and use. And what happened was, at 16 years into the service, this man was stricken with congestive heart failure. And the only thing that I could think of when I was told of his disease was, how can this be happening to me? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of our disease. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. I know I cared what happened to him, but I was more concerned about what was going to happen to me. And his prognosis was not very good. Thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know today, if I were given that same information, I would be asking him, is there anything I can do for you? Is there something I can do that would make life just a little bit easier for you? Because I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have taught me to reach outside myself. A few things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One night, it probably was about 8:30, just about like tonight, I was passed out on my sofa. And if it was 8:30 at night, I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up, and he sat me at the kitchen table, and he said, alcohol and drugs are our problem. And if you just didn't drink and take all those pills, everything would be okay. And I was just sort of sitting there, and I was just about half comatose as he was talking to me. And he started pouring the pills down the garbage disposal, and he started pouring the booze down the sink. And I just sort of watched him as he did it. And when he finished, I went and laid back down and passed out again. And about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I came to. Now, at this point in my sobriety, I had my disease, my sobriety, and my alcoholism, my disease had progressed to the point that I ceased to fall asleep or wake up. I passed out and came to. Just when I came to, it was just like, you know the feeling, you know, you're just shaking all over and you just need something real bad. And also, I had taken to drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine, vanilla extract,
scope.
You know, I hadn't been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned all these things all by myself. And I know a lot more things today since I've been here. I mean, you know, we got a lot of tricks. But I used to do back then just what I do today. I read labels. I would pick up cough medicine, and I would read the label of the one that had the most alcohol in it. And at that point in my life, I smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and I had a bad cough. So if you carry NyQuil cough medicine around in your purse, nobody asks. You know, you just take a swig of NyQuil cough medicine, and everybody just knows you got a bad cough, so nobody really bothered to ask. I mean, I just thought I was so, you know, just so smart. And in my keen alcoholic thinking, I was thinking, if they can't smell me, they can't tell me. So at any rate, here it was about 3 o'clock in the morning that day. And I'm really, really sick. And I need a drink or a pill or something really bad. And I don't think I can get in my car and drive to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night I found myself crawling through my garage floor, getting into the plastic bags and turning up those bottles just to get one drop. I had reached that point in the big book that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I knew that if I did not get a drink of alcohol, I would surely die. And that night my husband found me drinking a bottle of rubbing alcohol, and I would find myself in a hospital for a stomach pump. And I would have 3 car wrecks, and the last car wreck would get me to treatment for the first time. And I totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas. I just ran into a bridge abutment. And in my keen alcoholic thinking, I'm a blackout drinker, so I don't even know if I'm thinking. Somehow or another, I managed to go to a payphone, and I called the Irving police, and I told them that my car had been stolen. Now, I had no idea what happened to that car, but I somehow thought it had been stolen. So sure enough, here come the police with my husband. And I have absolutely no idea how much time transpired at that point. And we end up at the Irving police station, and I get to see the look of the non-alcoholic who just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And that policeman looked at my husband, and he said, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way back home, he looked at me, and he says, "Polly, you're so sick." And he says, "There's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And I said I would, and I entered that treatment center that night. And it was a 7-day detox with an outpatient program. And I liked what I learned there. And I went to a lot of AA meetings in those 7 days. And I just loved the way you all were. And I thought you had such nice smiles on your face. But there was just something down inside of me that kept saying, people like me just don't become alcoholic. And while I was, I had what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance, where sick falls in love with sick and we walk off into happy days. And this guy was telling me, you know, I'd tell him about all these things that those people were doing to me at home. And, you know, he'd tell me things like, "Well, boy, if they did things like that to me, I'd drink too." And, you know, all my life I was looking for somebody to co-sign my bullshit, and here he was. You know, it was great. I mean, it was just absolutely wonderful. And we walked off into a happy destiny for 58 days of sobriety. And on the 58th day, I got drunk, and my sponsor, who would become my sponsor in Texas, 12-stepped me out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and brought me back into that treatment center, more dead than alive. And I had reached that part in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about incomprehensible demoralization, because I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I just absolutely knew that I couldn't live sober, because now my problem was sobriety, because I couldn't live with the feelings of being sober. I couldn't stand the feelings of what kind of mother I had become, and I couldn't stand the kind of feelings of the kind of wife I had become, and I couldn't stand the feelings of the kind of daughter I had become. I just absolutely could not live inside my own skin one more day. because I knew that if I stayed sober, there was just no way that I could stand these feelings. You know, I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe this with all my life, when they say that men hate what they have done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I just didn't believe that I could live with what I had become. And I just knew that I couldn't live inside my own skin sober. But I know how to do time because I'm alcoholic. And I was a model patient for the next 7 days. And at the seventh day, they just thought I was doing so well. And they released me from that treatment center. But I knew that I couldn't live sober. Now, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. Somebody that leads you to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody that says something or touches your life some way that brings us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody who says something, touches just an Eskimo, just knowing that they led you here. And I had such a lady in my life, and she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her and that she had to find me. And see, today I know what that something was. It's God of my understanding. And she began to drive around and to see if she could find me. And she found my car outside this motel. And the door was on a half latch. And she pushed it open and she found me there. And I was laying on the floor. And she called the paramedics. And that was on April the 8th of 1977. And I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas, an overdose of pills and alcohol. Now, needless to say, that didn't take because I'm standing here tonight. But I got to tell you about the miracle in my life, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I might have sat 5 years in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, everybody's got these drunk stories. And, you know, you go to the meeting after the meeting, and everybody's got a, can you top this story? Well, I didn't have a, could you top this story? I mean, it's not real fun to talk about when I laid on my sofa and watched soap operas. You know, I didn't have one of those stories. So mine, can you top this story, was, well, I was pronounced dead on arrival. And I had about that much feeling behind it. The miracle for me, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that you told me that I was God's child, and you told me that God loves me. And I just sat here in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I couldn't feel it. And somewhere along around 5 years, sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, something began to happen. And the miracle began to take place in my life. And the miracle for me, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is, as I stand here behind this program, this podium tonight, and you told me that I was God's child, and you told me that God loves me, and tonight I know it. And that's the miracle. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself. And, you know, I guess the hope I want to say is if you're sitting here in this room tonight and you don't feel that God we all talk about, just please don't leave. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle, because it will happen to you. It will happen to you if you just keep coming back. If you just keep coming back. Because there's a magic in this room. I truly believe that God of my understanding is the love as he expresses it in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he talks to me through the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I don't care how you feel. You just come into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and something happens. And the magic begins to happen. And the love. You know, I came here today and I didn't know anybody here. And everybody just gives hugs and they love and the magic starts happening. And you begin to feel it. And we begin to live. And we begin to love each other. And the miracles begin to happen. God loves us so much. Just don't leave before the miracle. You know, that's the last drink of alcohol I ever had when I was pronounced dead on arrival, but it wasn't. I was so angry at that doctor for saving my life and told him, how dare you save my life? My life is mine to take. And that doctor looked at me with that same look that that policeman had looked at me with, and that look of the non-alcoholic who just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this doctor looked at me and he said, I did nothing for you. I did absolutely nothing. The only thing I can say is that God's not finished with you yet. And friends of mine took me home that night. And I don't know how when it's been that you've been around a drunk that needs a drink real bad, but I was quick. Man, I was nervous. So the next thing I know, I end up at a psychiatric hospital in Arlington, Texas. And I should have known something was going on because they had keys around their neck. And anyway, that was Saturday, and the next morning was Easter Sunday. And I got up that morning, it was Easter Sunday, and I walked around the day room, and I thought, oh, my God, I'm crazy, but I'm not this kind of crazy. And I instantly caught the disease of alcoholism. I ran up to the nurse's station. I said, I really don't belong here. I'm an alcoholic, and I don't belong in a hospital like this. And she says, well, honey, it's Easter Sunday, and your psychiatrist won't be here till tomorrow. So she gives me a little Thorazine. You know, I just kind of shuffle on off. And feeling no pain. And the next morning, sure enough, here comes the psychiatrist. And he says, Polly, you're right. You're an alcoholic and you're a drug addict, and your husband's on his way to pick you up, and he's taking you to Dallas, Texas. And sure enough, just like he said, here, you know, he came. And I don't know what had happened to him, but this man had a monumental dose of Al-Anon overnight. And he looked at me and he says, Polly, it'll be if you go to this hospital voluntarily, but it's really not necessary. He says, I have a piece of paper here signed by a Fort Worth judge that says you're going anyway. So people like me who don't become alcoholics had just been court committed to treatment, and my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. So on our way to Dallas, Texas, I look at my husband in my keen alcoholic thinking, and I say to him, if this is the last drink I'm ever going to have in my whole life, it looks to me like I ought to be able to drink on the way to treatment. And he looks at me, and he never says a word, and he just pulls into the liquor store, and he gets me a bottle of vodka and a paper cup and some ice cubes. And I don't know about you folks, but the paper cup and the ice cubes are gone. And anyway, he just looked, and he just said, son, away we went to Dallas. 11th of 1976, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the loving God, I haven't had to have a drink since. You guys are so enthusiastic. I love it. Great. Wonderful, the energy. And by the beautiful Bill, Polly, come on in, because we're going to, and if you're new, and it's right, that's what I come on to say to you, because over. And while I was in that treatment center, I was not, because I got to stand my own gut, my own skin, sober. Doing this the way that I thought that I ought to do. And I'd been in about 2 weeks. They walked into the day room. Bill and Bill were questioning why they were crying. I announced to the group that this would be the last group that went through Center Hospital, that the hospital lost its funding and it would close. I think that was a terrible thing that had to happen. But I know what it did to me. There was just something that just flowed right through my body. And I just knew that this was the last I had. And I just jumped up from that day room, and I ran into my room, and I went to bed, and I just screamed to God, please take it. I just can't handle it. And Bill came into the rooms, and he says, now, honey, can begin. And, you know, I'd just love to stand up here and tell you that that's the only Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked to us shortly after I had dinner. The life of surrenders. We have to have the first before we have the third. To just stand a giant, to grow through happiness, it seems like I have the disease. It seems to get real before I do anything. I had to get in a lot of pain before I ever did any steps. I just have to get in a lot of pain. But I love what Bill says, and as Bill sees it, and he says pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. And I believe that. Because I have learned in the 10 years that I've been sober that there is hope in the pain, because it just seems to be that that's the time that God, it's kind of like on the shoulder, taps me on the shoulder and says, just come on, honey, we're going to grow a little bit. And it's because when I get in pain and that gut starts wrenching and that, you know, and it just hurts so bad and that emotional pain just, you know, it always has just got me right to the bone. That's when, you know, I'm dusting off my big book and I'm reading it and I've got out the 12 and 12 and I've got my prayers out and I'm just really getting friendly with God. And that's when I'm talking to Him a lot. And it's not that I don't talk to God a lot when things are going good. But the book talks about that we're people who can become complacent and rest on our laurels. And I am so grateful that today I don't see pain as punishment, because I just don't believe God, if my understanding punishes me. I truly believe there's no negatives in God's world and that pain is just an opportunity to grow. But, you know, I got the disease of alcoholism real bad, and unless somebody gives me an opportunity, I don't grow much. I just sort of sit back. And it's not that I don't want to. It just doesn't seem like I'm too motivated. But just let me get in some pain, and I get real motivated because I want to get out of it real fast. At any rate, I stayed in that hospital for another 2 weeks, and they taught me a lot about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm really grateful because this fellowship has saved my life. And you know, there's a thing that goes on in Texas, and it goes on in California, and I'm sure it goes on in St. Louis. And people talk a lot about people who've gone through treatment centers. And so I got out of treatment, and you know, people would talk about, you know, I had a $10,000 big book and stuff like that, and I had to pay that to get 30 days of sobriety. And then I used to sit back and say, oh my God, I can't even sober up right. You know, I just didn't think I was doing anything right. But I know that I did it just exactly the way I was supposed to do it, and that God showed me the path that I needed to take, and for that I'm grateful. When I left that treatment center, Bill gave us a prescription for sobriety. And on that prescription it said, attend a lot of AA meetings, read the big book, talk to God, get a sponsor. And the last item on that prescription was, don't ever listen to the way a man talks. Just watch the way he walks. And you know, I can stand up behind this podium tonight, and I'm here to tell you folks, I talk a lot better program than I actually walk. I can say just about anything I want to say from behind this podium. But it's what I do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that's important. And you know, it's real important to me to watch who the people are who are active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The kids that put this convention on. They're busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because part of the triangle is service, recovery, unity, and service. And today, I want to stick with the winners, so I watch the people who are busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to get to be friends with the guy who's putting up the chairs and sweeping the floor and making the coffee, because that's the person that's going to save my life. Because those are the people that are busy in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, I stick with the winners. And it's real important for me to watch what people do and to watch the way people walk. I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that I've been willing to do the things that I've been asked to do and been willing to do the things that I was told that would make me feel better if I would just do these things. Now, I never could understand how making coffee and sweeping a floor would make me feel better. I just couldn't understand that when I first got here. But now when somebody comes up to me and says, how do you get sober? I don't know. Get a broom. I don't know. I don't know about you, but when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't read real well. My concentration was about 30 seconds. But I was pretty quick because I was nervous, and I could sweep, and I could pick up chairs, and I could make coffee, and I could do those kinds of things until I could get to where I could sit still long enough to begin to read the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This program has given me so much. When I came into this program, I just was the kind of person that would go up to my sponsor, and I just had so much guilt. And I just didn't know if I could stay sober because of all the guilt I had, especially around being an alcoholic mom. I just thought, how will I ever, ever be able to live with that? How will these kids ever forgive me? Because if you live in an alcoholic home, that's not a lot of fun. And they had a military father and a drunk mother, and they just literally were not parented. There was just nobody there for those kids. And I just had a lot of guilt about that, and I just didn't know if I could stay sober. And I used to walk around, and I'd talk to my AA sponsor, and I'd say, you know, nobody understands me. That was my pat line. Nobody understands me. They'll never forgive me. They'll never love me again. And that's when I was told to get into the 12 and 12 and just burn the 11th step prayer into my mind. That it had absolutely nothing to do with being understood. It had only to do with me being understanding. And it had absolutely nothing to do with me being forgiven. It had only to do with me being forgiving. And it had nothing to do with me being loved. It had only to do with me being loving. And I was told, Polly, if you want to feel better, you go find that newcomer and you sit down and you start talking to him and you share your few days of sobriety or your few months of sobriety. And pretty soon you'll start to feel better. And you know, I don't know how that works because this whole program is a paradox. I was talking to one of my AA friends that I met a little while ago, and we were sitting talking before the meeting about how paradoxical the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is. You have to surrender to win. You have to give it away to keep it. And I didn't know about those things. And I was just told, if I'll just reach out to the newcomer and share this program, or reach out to anybody who's in pain in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would begin to feel better about me. And that's what happened. And the more I shared with you, the better I began to feel about me. And I had to give it away to keep it. You know, I think that's why we just make psychologists crazy. Because they want to say, get in there and do it for you and take care of yourself. And man, you know, that's been our problem. I have to give it away to keep it. And the more I did that, the better I felt. I've been privileged in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be sponsored. And I've lived in Texas, and I've lived in Michigan, and I've lived in California. And I've had sponsors in all three states. And I've been privileged to sponsor. And through that relationship, I began to learn about love. I knew absolutely nothing about love, but I began to learn about love in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I began to love as an action. You know, I can stand up here behind this podium and I can tell you I love you, or I can tell my children I love them, or I can tell my husband I love him, but if I don't do something to show them that I love them, it's nothing. And I began to learn that love is an action. Things with love is an action. But if I stand up here behind this podium and I tell you I love you, and then I go out there and I start talking about you, that's not love. And I began to learn about love. And I think in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we learn a lot about unconditional love. Because it doesn't matter what you've done or where you've been. You just come in here and everybody says, just sit down, take a seat, we give you a big hug. We're just concerned about where you're going. Just love. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first got sober, I did a lot of things that I'm not real proud of. In Texas, they're just like I'm sure they are in St. Louis, they are in California, they say, you know, don't get involved for the first year. Well, I'm sure I must have been sober 20 minutes before I got involved. And I started to try to fix myself behind relationships and sex. And one more time, I started to self-destruct. And I started to feel just the way I did when I was drinking and using about myself. But a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous love me. And they just said, Polly, just keep coming back. Because I just started to one more time to feel that overwhelming shame. And you know, all it was that I was looking for was just somebody to love me. Because I couldn't love myself, so I was looking for you to love me. When I was 3 years sober, I divorced on this program. And I hadn't, that marriage had been in a lot of trouble for a long time, and had been in trouble before sobriety. But I'm the kind of person that has to fix things and make things okay. And I just felt like I couldn't leave this husband. He's so sick. And, you know, if I leave him, he would surely die. And my AA sponsor used to tell me, Polly, he's not dying of congestive heart failure. You are. And so at 3 years, we divorced. And I need to tell you about how much I had to do with his living or dying. Because 6 months after we divorced, he married a much younger woman with 3 children, and he's never been healthier. So, you know, as Sandy B. says, drop the rock. At 2 years sober, my father died of cancer, and it was a terrible death. But thanks to this program, I was sober, and we loved each other, and it was good. When I was 3.5 years sober, Dave asked me to marry him. And Dave is also a member of this fellowship. And I had known Dave since I was 6 months sober. And we kind of kid today and we say, well, if we'd have known we were going to marry each other, we wouldn't have told each other the things we told each other. But it was really neat because Dave had moved away to Salt Lake City. And he came back to Texas. And he told me, he says, Polly, I love you. But he says, you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you're the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because things like that don't happen to people like me. But it's really neat, because we love each other a lot. And we've been married for 6.5 years. Now, we're self-centered alcoholics. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about being selfish and self-centered. And we know absolutely nothing about how to have a relationship. How do self-centered, selfish people have a relationship? Well, you get a lot of help. I first had to admit I was powerless over this relationship and don't know a thing about it. So I started watching people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who had marriages that work. And it's fun to be married to another member of this fellowship. And my husband is secretary of a meeting in California. And that's where he is tonight, at that meeting. And, I mean, it takes a real big deal, and me speaking in St. Louis ain't it, for him to miss that meeting, because that's a commitment. But we're busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we listen to what the old-timers tell us. And there's people around, and it's obvious that we don't know how to do it. And we're finding out what it's like to love each other. And to try not to be so self-centered. And to need it my way. And that's tough. But thanks to the fellowship, and I tell you what works real good on relationships, if any of you haven't tried it, is the traditions. It works on the group, it works on relationships. It's absolutely marvelous. And that's kind of what we do in a meeting that we have with couples, is we kind of talk about the traditions of AA and Al-Anon couples. I'd like to tell you a little bit about those 2 kids, and then I'm going to sit down. The hardest thing, as I told you, I had to do was to cut my 2 boys. When I sobered up, my youngest son was 14 years old. And it became real apparent to me that he was a full-blown drug addict. And I just used to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd sing that old alcoholic song of, it just isn't fair. You know, it just isn't fair. Look, I'm sober, and look at him. And, you know, of course, everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what they're going to tell you. They just tell you, you know, just read the book and come on back to meetings. And his alcoholism and his drug addiction sent me to the rooms of Al-Anon, let me tell you. And I thought that I would just die behind this. because I was just sure that the reason he was so messed up was because of me. And then my oldest son was the person that took care of me. And what would he do but go and marry a practicing alcoholic 11 years his senior? When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still mean this today, I said that if I never have to look into the face of my sons again with the pain on their faces, I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know when's the last time you've seen a passed out drunk, but we don't breathe too good. And my oldest son used to shake me at night and scream, "Mom, wake up, wake up." And I would come to and I'd see the fear on his face. And I just thought, oh my God, I just don't ever want to have to look at anybody's face with that much fear because of something I'm doing. And you know, for 10 years I haven't had to do that. And for that I'm so grateful. And for that I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just not to have to look at that kind of fear in the face of somebody because of something I'm doing. But God's given me a lot more. 3.5 years ago, my son called me up on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." 6.5 years before, he hadn't wanted what I had. 6.5 years before, I was to attend a program at his school and he told me, "Don't you dare show up at my school. I'm so ashamed of you." And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And I have been privileged in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be able to give my son a birthday cake in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the past 3 years. Miracle. And it's because of that son that I have to leave here at 6 o'clock in the morning, because I'm on my way to Dallas, because that son is going to graduate from the University of Texas at Arlington, and he's graduating with honors. And that's, I still can't believe it. I said, "James, it's taken a little while. He's 25 years old, and he's just getting out of school, but he had to qualify for our fellowship a little bit. So it's taken a little longer," but it's like dynamite, and it's wonderful. Russ, my oldest son, is one of our Al-Anon members, and being one of our Al-Anon members is that, you know, they need one of us to be okay. It's one of us that's, you know, that they need to take care of us so they have a reason to get up in the morning. And 2.5 years ago, his wife got sober. And when she got sober one more time, he didn't have a reason for living. So about 2 years, my daughter-in-law called me up on the phone, and she told me that my son had taken a bottle of pills and cut his wrist. And you know, I wanted to take the next thing to my son. And you know, it was the people in AA and the people in Al-Anon that said, "Polly, you just keep showing up at AA meetings, and you let God take care of us." Well, I'm really glad that I'm just showing up at meetings and God's in the business of being God, because he moved Russ to Sheboygan, Michigan, and I would have never thought of that. Fort Worth, Texas. But that's not true in Sheboygan, Michigan. And he's had to go to some effort and had to become willing to go to meetings. But I'm here to program of Al-Anon. This program works. And you know, when I came here, you know, I'd have waited a long time if all I'd have come here to do was to get my son sober or to get my other son in Al-Anon. I'd have waited a long time. But the people in Alcoholics Anonymous told me, "Polly, you just keep walking, because you may be the only big book they ever read." I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love being sober. And you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, "Left to my own devices, I would have self-destructed." And that's true. Left to me, I tried to kill me. But you taught me how to love me. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. You know, when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you would have told me to make a list of all the things I wanted when I was 10 years sober, I would have never had the courage to ask God to give me the things I have today. I would have never had the courage to ask God for those things because I have been given so much. I love AA. And I like to end my talks with a little poem that Bill used to say in Center Hospital, because it's what this program means to me. I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thank you.